Without question, it was an extraordinary year. Developments included the failure of storied investment banks and the introduction of a whole arsenal of economic policy tools and responses to a cascading set of problems. And entering 2009, having been back, as Suzanne mentioned, I lived here before for 10 years from 78 to 88. So having been back in the South now for almost 2 years, I added one more tool to the list of policy tools that includes rate cuts and special purpose liquidity facilities and rescue funds and deposit guarantees and bailouts of institutions that we thought posed a risk to the global system. I had a plate of black-eyed peas on New Year's Day. I figured, hell, it can't hurt. And I think we need to keep a sense of humor in these times. I don't usually turn to my friends in the accounting profession. Gary Price is here, I know. Tom Huff is here. I think Tim Vincent may be here and others. But there's a joke going around that I think captures the times. It's the comments by management on their balance sheet at year-end 2008. Nothing on the left is left, and nothing on the right is right. Yeah. I've also heard the opposite, that is, nothing on the left is right, so I guess if it's wrong enough, then nothing is left, right? I'll return to the topic of balance sheets in a moment, particularly the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve. As a policymaker on the Federal Open Market Committee, the FOMC, it helps me to organize my thinking as we enter this year by revisiting some basic questions. And I'll structure my remarks today around two such questions. They are, first, what is Fed policy trying to accomplish in these extraordinary times? And second, how is the Fed going about accomplishing its policy objectives? The context here is really important. It really matters. The principal instrument of Fed policy by which the Fed influences the economy is the federal funds rate, the overnight rate at which banks lend and borrow central bank reserves. The Fed funds rate can't go any lower. As you probably know, the FOMC, in its meeting on December 16th, lowered the federal funds rate target to a range of 0 to 25 basis points. A year ago, when I spoke to this club, the Fed funds rate was at 4.25%. In terms that economists use, the policy rate has reached its zero lower bound. This has raised concerns that the Fed can't do any more to combat recession, and that monetary policy, broadly defined, has lost relevance at a crucial point in time. I would argue a Fed funds rate this low will have considerable macroeconomic input or impact, especially if combined with policies to restore financial market functioning. Now, traditionally, these January talks by the sitting Atlanta Fed president at the downtown Rotary Club have concentrated on the economic outlook. And I will talk a bit today about the outlook. But I plan to depart somewhat from tradition to explain the new monetary policy regime that I expect will be employed for the foreseeable future while the policy rate can't go any lower. My intent is to assure you that the Federal Reserve has not exhausted its policy tools. The policy arsenal available to the Federal Reserve remains a powerful corrective force on the economy. As usual, I must repeat the disclaimer that all of my remarks are my personal views and don't necessarily reflect the views of my colleagues on the FOMC. I'll begin with some economic highlights of the year that we have just thankfully put behind us. We now know that the U.S. economy was in a recession that began in December 2007, and this could end up one of the longest recessions since World War II. Friday's employment report reinforced both the depth and breadth of the downturn. Non-farm payrolls tumbled an estimated 524,000 jobs in December, as the unemployment rate hit 7.2%, a 16-year high. The economy lost around 2.6 million jobs for the year. Moreover, the job losses are very broad-based across industries, with only government, private, education, and healthcare adding jobs in December. The depth of the downturn is reflected in the dramatic decline in consumer spending in the third and fourth quarters of 2008, led by a collapse of auto sales. Motor vehicle sales were some 36% below year earlier levels in December. And as you have read, holiday sales were very weak. As much as anything, we'll remember 2008 for extreme volatility and dysfunction in financial markets, particularly credit capital markets serving businesses and households. Volumes of credit flows fell off dramatically, risk spreads widened, and some markets virtually shut down. We've seen some improvement since the worst period in September and October, but all in all, the financial conditions going into 2009 are still unsettled. Today, as we move into 2009, economic conditions are extremely weak and financial markets remain impaired. In the banking sector, a posture of risk aversion, or at least caution, persists. Keeping these circumstances in mind, let me address the first question I posed at the outset. That is, what's the Fed trying to accomplish? In simple terms, we're focused on containing the impact of the economic downturn and stimulating a recovery as early as possible. Now, the Fed is not alone in this effort. Treasury Department and other federal agencies have also implemented policies to support economic growth, and the incoming administration has proposed a large fiscal stimulus package for the economy. The Fed, as the country's central bank, conducts monetary policy as distinct from fiscal policy under legal mandates set down by Congress. The Fed's mandated policy objectives, the so-called dual mandate, are sustainable economic growth that maximizes employment along with low and stable inflation. The mandates have not changed, but what has changed is some aspects of how we pursue those objectives. Extraordinary circumstances this last year and a half have required the Fed to expand the set of tools employed to meet its mandated objectives. Modern conventional monetary policy is usually thought of as the Fed's adjustment of the federal funds rate target in the overnight market for bank reserves. Bank reserves are a liability on the central bank's balance sheet. The Fed funds rate is important because it influences the whole term structure of interest rates. The lowering of the Fed funds rate target some 525 basis points since September of 2007 can be seen as a direct response to worsening economic conditions and the resulting downward revisions to the outlook. The federal funds rate is a very general tool and one that relies on the functioning of credit markets to have its intended effects. But as you know, credit markets have not been functioning normally. Even the markets strongly backed by the United States government such as the so-called agency markets, that is Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae, and so forth, the agency mortgage-backed securities markets. In turn, mortgage markets and housing demand have suffered. Over the last 16 or 17 months, problems that began in the subprime mortgage-backed securities market spread rapidly and often ferociously among interconnected markets and institutions. It's not too much of an exaggeration to say that no one and no market remained untouched. And in response to these events, the Fed had to be creative. Initially, as the Fed responded to credit market strains, the focus was on interbank markets. But as problems spread, the Fed introduced close to a dozen targeted credit and financial market facilities. These facilities now include short-term credit programs for financial institutions, longer-term lending arrangements, direct asset purchases, and swap lines with foreign central banks. The Fed has intervened, for example, in the commercial paper market, the agency market, which I defined earlier, and the private asset-backed securities market. Programs have supported banks, non-bank financial institutions, money market mutual funds, and, as you know, specific institutions deemed to be systemically critical. Among the programs in force is the direct purchase of agency, and I explained that earlier, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and so forth, agency notes and mortgage-backed securities. These securities are directly linked to mortgage rates. Purchases of mortgage-backed securities, agency mortgage-backed securities, began just a few days ago. The goal of such a program is not, in my view, to engineer a particular interest rate level, that is to hit a particular rate target. But direct purchases can promote directionally lower rates, help restore normal market functioning, and thereby achieve a return to reliance on private sector market-based credit allocation. The introduction of targeted asset side measures, such as the one I just described, has been aimed squarely at the breakdown of credit markets, the circulatory system of our economy. In my view, a precondition of economic recovery is the return of normal functioning of credit markets. Let me emphasize that this asset-focused approach is a departure from what the textbooks describe as conventional monetary policy, and it's not without controversy. Some have called it credit policy to distinguish it from conventional approaches, where the central bank achieves its objectives through its influence on bank reserves on the liability side of the balance sheet. Now, I don't often use slides in speeches, but I want to show you an image because it so clearly illustrates this new approach and I believe helps to answer the second question that I posed at the outset, and that is, how will the Fed go about accomplishing its policy objectives by using the asset side of its balance sheet? Could we put that slide up, please? As the graph shows, there are two aspects of this policy approach: growth of the Fed's balance sheet in absolute terms and change of the composition of assets. Even with the federal funds rate effectively at zero, there is ample scope to do more of both if conditions require. Is it working? Well, isolating the effects unique to the Fed's policy actions on these various markets is difficult. Nonetheless, financial market functioning has shown some signs of improving in recent weeks. By way of example, in the short-term interbank funding markets, which are of central importance, spreads have declined markedly across maturities. Conditions in the commercial paper market have also improved. Commercial paper issuance has increased from recent lows, and spreads on, for example, 30-day asset-backed commercial paper have narrowed. In addition, mortgage rates have fallen in response to the Fed's announcement that it will purchase large quantities of mortgage-backed securities and agency debt. Freddie Mac's most recent mortgage market survey showed the average 30-year fixed rate has declined to just over 5%, the lowest since the series began in 1972. It's impossible to measure what economists call a counterfactual, what might otherwise have happened. But without a willingness to use all available tools, as this graph represents, and to adapt policy tools as conditions required, I'm convinced the economy's performance and current outlook would have been considerably worse. You can take the slide down now, please. Looking ahead, the overall economy is weak, and I expect that it will remain weak at least through the first half of 2009. The incoming data suggests that fourth quarter GDP contracted somewhere between 4 and 6% annualized. And this quarter's performance could be similar. At some point, perhaps later this year, I believe financial markets will have stabilized sufficiently to support a recovery. So I am looking for an improving economy in the second half. Now, to temper that a bit, there is always the risk of a shock or reversal in the financial sector or elsewhere that could again alter the outlook to the downside. Clearly, the U.S. economy is in a tough fight against pernicious economic forces. But on balance, confidence is warranted. Indeed, restored confidence is an essential ingredient in the mix of factors that will change the momentum of the economy. To buttress confidence, I want to assure you the Federal Reserve still has considerable ammunition in reserve to be used as needed. And by this time next year, if I'm invited back to speak, I'm hopeful that circumstances will look very much better than they do today. And I must admit that I don't really much like black-eyed peas. So I'm hoping I can take a pass on that dish next New Year's Day.